For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
She's making him call her ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Like the yes, ma'am line.
So cringy.
For me, it was like, come on. No.
Season 5 of Yellowstone has begun, and how are you feeling about it? Love it or hate it, you have to agree that the first of two premiere episodes was decidedly slower than the way Season 4 began. Until, quite suddenly, it wasn't. One major tragedy marked the Paramount Network premiere, but that death wasn't the most difficult scene to watch on Sunday night. I'm Addison Hager, and I'm excited to talk about an all-time uncomfortable exchange between Jamie and Beth. Has she finally gone too far? Welcome back to Dutton Rules, a Yellowstone 1923 podcast that promises episode breakdowns and cast interviews, and this week we got both. Billy Dukes is standing by to dive into all of the delightful pain and misery, plus a few rainbows that grew from the opening glimpses of this fifth and potentially final season. Once again, we'll look for your participation with emails at staff@tasteofcountry.com. That's also a place to answer this week's trivia question. Season 4 ended with John set to run for governor and Beth, well, blackmailing her brother after he killed his birth father. Season 5 begins many months later, with John being sworn in as governor and Casey Dutton's wife, Monica, set to give birth to their second child. I'll save the spoilers for another minute or two, except to say that one of these two events goes very, very poorly. Tap follow on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you podcast, because we're here weekly. Please consider leaving a 5-star rating and review where possible. It really goes a long way to letting others know about Dutton Rules. So, who dies? What's going on in the bunkhouse? Did Beth and Jamie make up? Let's talk about it all together during this new episode of Dutton Rules.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, Addison!
Hello, Billy. Oh my goodness gracious. Carter has gone through puberty. That's all I'm going to say. That's all I'm going to say to start us off. Oh my goodness. Yeah, well, we're going to talk about that a little bit later. But first, we are back with the one and only, your little golden nugget, the trivia.
So every week we have a trivia question and we'll bring this back. We did this during season one. The Monday episodes will have a trivia question and the winner essentially gets to boss me around for an episode. I'll say whatever you want me to say. I'll sing, I'll dance, whatever you need me to do. You can have fun, be creative with it. If you are the first person to answer this trivia question, you ready?
Drum roll, please. Yes, I'm ready.
This is a hard one and it's going to require you to have watched 1883 as well, or at least be familiar with it.
Okay.
Counting 1923 and counting the baby in Monica's belly. How many actors have we seen play a John Dutton in the Yellowstone franchise?
I think I could answer that. I'll hold tight. I'll hold tight my answer for the next episode. And I just want to say, of course you would choose this one. If listeners who've been following this podcast for a while, Billy loves a good family tree. And this does not surprise me that this is also in that wheelhouse. This is Billy's bread and butter.
I've been working on a pretty massive family tree and we'll roll that out at some point. But staff@tasteofcountry.com is how you get in those answers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also the place if you want to just email any other thoughts, questions, or comments with regards to Yellowstone. Addison or I will respond to those emails pretty promptly.
Let's kick things off, Billy, with the kind of the elephant in the room, the classic, you know, we're not surprised that the season is going to be full of it. The Beth and Jamie tension.
So awkward in season two or episode two. I'm having a hard time reconciling like the soft, sweet Beth we saw with Rip next mm-hmm. to this like animal she is with Jamie. Like it's almost like I'm not really quite buying this anger any longer because she is so, so mean to him, unnecessarily mean to him in that second episode.
Well, and I went down a Reddit rabbit hole, and I did multiple times during the second episode specifically, and it seems as a whole, people are kind of annoyed at this point. Like, as a general consensus, at least on the Reddit thread that I was reading, people are like, okay, look, how much longer can we, like, you know, throw out this or, you know, continue to drag on this Beth and Jamie drama? We get it. Either, you know, someone die, someone, like, can we just cut this and be done with it? I personally also agree. I'm a little bit, I feel like I'm being drugged behind the end of a pickup truck of like, all right, like, we get it. There's tension here.
Yeah.
We've had tension for every single season. I'm a little snooze fest over it.
So to kind of recap how we got here, many, many years ago, Beth wanted to get an abortion and Jamie took her to the Indian mm-hmm. reservation and they ended up, was it a sterilization? Is that what they did? Was it a hysterectomy?
Hysterectomy. Yes. Thank you. That's what I was looking for. Yes. Hysterectomy.
Okay. They made it so she can't have babies any longer. And Beth finds out and she has held that, over Jamie for the rest of his life. And Jamie, he was just 18 years old at the time, kind of doing the best he could do, made a poor decision, but it was a really tough situation.
Right.
And she hasn't given him any ounce of forgiveness for that in the year since. So you flash forward to the end of season four, where she not only blackmails Jamie into killing his real father, Garrett, she takes mm-hmm. a photo of him dumping the body off at the train station so that they own Jamie essentially during this political campaign, which there's a pretty big plot hole there that we can get to in a little bit. So now we get to season five and John is governor and Beth is really turning the screws to the point where she's making him call her ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Like the yes, ma'am line.
So cringy.
For me, it was like, come on. No.
So
it's like
cringy,
watching a family fight. Yes.
Yeah. Which also, if you want to physically see the scene, Billy and I do recaps on our YouTube mm-hmm. channel. So head to Taste of Country YouTube if you want to physically see it. If you don't like our rendition of it, go check it out there because it's just, I have no words. But continue, Billy.
Yeah, I mean, that's essentially the nut of it. I mean, I think Jamie makes some really good points and is a valuable perspective kind of in what the Duttons are doing. Like, if they listen to him, they could kind of get what they want and stay out of jail. But Beth's just so mm-hmm. hell-bent on doing whatever the opposite that he wants is that it almost feels counterproductive. And the whole thing is almost like watching your family fight at the Thanksgiving table, but it lasts like 2 hours.
Multiple years.
Long enough. You're like, enough is enough.
Yes.
New topic.
Yes.
New topic bell. Ding.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. Well, unfortunately, I kind of feel like, you know, the new topic bell is going to be Jamie dying. Like, I don't see reconciliation. I see death.
Yeah. I think that someone has to die, either Jamie
Beth
or...
Beth is not going to die.
She could. She could. I could see her dying. Or John Dutton, I could see dying. Like, one of those three... or two of them maybe is going to have to go before the end of this season or certainly by the end of the franchise.
Now you just said there was a little bit of a plot hole. What is that plot hole with them?
What? Here's what Beth and John don't seem to realize. They're pushing Jamie around and they're like, you'll do exactly what I say or else, presumably meaning
right.
or else we're going to turn you into the cops. You'll go to jail for killing your dad. Jamie,
right.
He knows all the Dutton family secrets. Why wouldn't he just flip as the moment that the cops pick him up, be like, oh, well, you want some real dirt, and then just start spilling the news on everything the Duttons have done over the last, you know, decades.
True.
And they'd be in jail just as quick and just for just as long as Beth and John. So in my opinion, either Jamie doesn't realize the leverage he has, or Beth and John don't, or everybody does, and they're just kind of blind to it. Like, I don't understand why Jamie's putting up with this because he's got a really, really good Trump card in his back pocket.
Honestly, I don't. I mean, you left me kind of speechless. I don't have a rebuttal or thought to that. I mean, Yeah.
Maybe it'll happen. Maybe we'll, good point.
Yeah, I was like, great point, Billy. Left me stumped.
maybe by the end of the season, we'll see it, I guess. But golly, it is tough to watch Beth and Jamie on screen together.
Yeah, like I said, I'm a little bit at my end of like, all right. I mean, I'm braced for it. I'm very expectant that that's what I'm going to get for the rest of the season. But,
you know, when this episode one started and we had that flashback sequence between Rip and Beth,
mm-hmm.
and that kind of mm-hmm. led to us seeing that softer Beth, I thought your prediction that we're going to see this warm and fuzzy Beth was going to be spot on. But then we get to episode two and she's yes mamming him. And I'm like, nope, that ain't going to happen. Sorry, Addison. Not this year.
Well, and I will say, yeah, I know. Well, come on, Billy. We are just in episode two. Maybe. I'm still holding out hope. And I will say it was fun. Like I enjoyed seeing the optimist in me. I enjoyed seeing the flashback of Rip and Beth because that's not where you see her soft side. You see that actress did a great job playing the younger Beth because I was like, wow, she came out of the womb fighting. Like this girl, like yeah. This has, you know, been her personality since birth, essentially. But yes, I agree. It was at that when it flashed back to present day and it was Rip and Beth in obviously the present. And she was pretty much saying it, which made me laugh. She's like, I'm so sorry. And he's like, for what? And pretty much she's like, well, I really meant this as like a blanket apology for, you know, like anything over the past several years. And you see her, it was cool to see Rip. Like, yes, you saw her kind of break down emotionally. Like clearly that is something that's been really stirring in her. But I think what I enjoyed seeing was Rip seeing that little bit of a softer, because Rip pretty much through the rest of the first two episodes is back to, you know, hard Rip, you know,
right,
life is rough, move on, where he was pretty much saying like, hey, I know the heart in there and it's big, no one else sees it, you know, but I know what's deep inside. I thought that was a really sweet intimate moment. Like you said, yes, it was quickly squashed, but I don't, like I said, I still have hope that we will see moments like that. I could be wrong.
The most valuable thing I took out of the flashback sequences, really both of them, because we had the one in episode two, is we got to see that old school bunkhouse with, and I didn't realize it at the time, that was Lloyd. Like that greasy, gray, dark-haired guy was Lloyd sitting at the poker table.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. And I will have to give I can't take credit for this. I watched it a second time with friends and one of my friends pointed this out. So I can't take this credit for myself. But OK, when I was watching that the first time, I was like, man, they did a really good job of getting someone who looks like mm-hmm. Lloyd. Like you totally knew that was like Lloyd, younger Lloyd. Well, Billy, it's his son. Like it's literally Lloyd in real life. So that's Lloyd is
Forrey J. Smith.
Forrey J. Smith, yeah. That is his actual son, Forrest Smith.
Really?
Except I will say I got a little confused. I did a lot of research, so it is accurate. And on Google, he goes by Forrest Smith. If you do notice in the credits, he goes by Forrest Wilder. A little confused on that one.
Okay.
But if you Google him, he's Forrest Smith. And yeah, he's actually Forrey's, who was played by, gosh, Forrey and Forrest. Forrey, who plays Lloyd, it is actually
right.
His son. Which, his how son. Freaking cool.
That's fascinating. Wow. That's really interesting. I had no idea.
Really, I
was really
excited
to
bring that to the table, Billy.
Who are those other Yahoos? None of them seem to be in the bunkhouse still.
Yeah, I don't have that lineage for you. I just had that one.
Okay. There wasn't a whole lot from the bunkhouse. Well, in the first mm-mm. episode, I'm going to say something. This might be a little controversial, but like season four, the way season four opened with that 15-minute like opus and a gunfight and a chase and all these things happening, we get uh-huh. to season five. Episode one was pretty slow until the very, very end.
Fest.
Like it was just yeah. a lot of political sort of back and forth and learning about John being governor and a lot of character reintroduction yeah. as well, like Angela Blue Thunder. Is back. We learn that Sarah Atwood is coming. We meet old Tate. We meet old Carter. kind of remind ourselves what all the other characters look like. It was a lot of that.
Well, and it's almost as if they should have flipped the two episodes. You know what I mean? Of like the episode two was so full of action, which I wonder if that's how they kind of kept us, like the fact that they premiered both in the same day almost worked for episode one's benefit. You know, like if he had just done episode one, like would have people have tuned in because it was so slow where he put both together. So it kind of helped the energy that was lacking in episode one.
I agree with you there. That's a good point. You get to the end of episode two and you end up feeling pretty good about your night.
Yeah. Well, I loved seeing Lainey Wilson on screen.
Yeah. She plays a character named Abby. It sounds like she's a singer-songwriter and she was set to perform at the governor's celebration. It sounds like her and Ryan are going to have a little bit of a romance. Is that kind of where your head was at as well?
I get that vibe, and you know what? I'm here for it. The actor's name is Ian Bowen, which I'm just going to say, if he ever needs a plus one to a Yellowstone event, I will gladly, you know, if Lainey is MIA, I will gladly, Ian, if you're listening, I will gladly volunteer myself. I will say I did cringe. I was like, oh gosh, like, could we have written this maybe a little bit better? Like, when he goes over to, you know, rope her and... she's like, oh, didn't see that. Or did she say something like, oh, didn't see that coming? I was like, this is the cringiest moment. Yeah. I was like, oh gosh. Oh gosh. But I'm here for this.
Well, we do have a little bit. We talked to Lainey about her character and she shared a little bit with us. We talked to her before the premiere, so she couldn't share a whole lot, but she confirmed that she might, which means does, have a few kissing scenes. not much more than that, though. There's not going to be like, she's not like the new Hassie Harrison Laramie, where she's just sort of sleeping around the bunkhouse.
Right.
So a little kissing. Well, and then we asked her if her and Ian Bowen were a couple, because we saw a picture of them kind of cuddling together. Mm-hmm. Not the case. Mm-hmm. That photo is a good reason why I think that Ryan and Abby are a couple on the show.
Well, I love at least, you know, the little clip that we did get to see of this Abby character. What I enjoy is Lainey's kind of getting to play herself in the sense of, you know what I mean? Like the mannerisms and even stuff that she's saying, like, you know, we've talked to Lainey before and it doesn't seem like she's having to, you know, be someone so far out of her wheelhouse that it's like, who are you? Which I think is, I don't know. I think that's cool. And I think that's going to lead to more natural acting. I could be wrong, but I feel like, well, I enjoyed all that to be said. I enjoyed sometimes you put, you know, people who are singers or whatever and a celebrity in a cameo role and it just flops. But I really enjoyed watching her on screen.
Well, let's not get too excited. I mean, she had about four lines and she wasn't in episode two at all. I mean, there's still time.
I still stand strong, Billy. That's fine.
I mean, she's not quite lining up for Emmy, I don't think, at this point, but maybe.
okay, that is fair. But if you remember, I set the bar incredibly low for Faith Hill, so I'm trying to, like, not be so Debbie Downer. I don't know. True. I'm also not just giving out compliments, so right. I said what I said about Lainey. That's how I feel about it. We'll circle back. Fair enough.
Meet the new Edison. Not backing down from any opinion in season two of the Dutton Rules podcast.
We're a well-oiled machine now, and Addison is staking her ground. I do really like, though, just like kind of sticking on the singer aspect, I do like that Taylor Sheridan not only adds like the actual musical acts in his shows, but he gives them like the opportunity to say their name. Like Shane Smith and the Saints, who play for the governor's party, like they are able to say, hey, we're Shane Smith and the Saints from Austin, Texas, which shout out to Austin, Texas. You know what I mean? Like, I love that. I love that he gives them an opportunity to like actually get clout. Why are you laughing?
That's a good point. I was just thinking like, oh yeah, because Texas, you know, no one's talking about how good Texas is. But you know, it's a good point. It's the equivalent of like the band name on the drum head. It's like some signage so that people actually know who the band is and can find them. That's more than just Shazamming the song like I did.
Right.
So we called it, I think, that John Dutton does get to become governor. He's elected and several months have passed. I figure about 6 or 7 months have passed since the end of season four and the beginning of season five. And I'm saying that just because that's about how big Monica's belly has gotten. So he announced his election, ran the campaign, ends up winning, and he becomes governor. And he's on this campaign of for the land. That's his campaign slogan. He's doing everything for the land, which really means everything for the Dutton Ranch, for the Yellowstone Ranch. And he brings back that saying, living with the land, not on it, and how he won't let New Yorkers make Montana their playground. And as he says that, I have like two competing emotions. At first, I'm like,
okay,
hell yeah, get out of our state. You go, Governor Dutton. The other part of me is like, oh, you know, a vacation house in Montana does sound quite nice. I wouldn't mind that one bit. Can I afford those taxes? You know, it's like, so I'm kind of split with John Dutton saying. I see both perspectives. Like, I know why people want to be there, but also, hell yeah, kick them out. Build a wall.
I do love his, I'm the opposite of progress. I'm the wall it bashes against. I was like, and here we go with the one-liners from John.
So many good Dutton lines. That was probably the best. That was actually a line from season four. I don't know if we had any brilliant lines in season five. Certainly had a memorable one from Tate. Yeah. That was a really good line. But I don't know. It's going to be a lot of politics, I think, this season with Dutton. I hope it kind of transitions to a little bit more Dutton-centric stuff, because to me that's more interesting. But they did need to let the character grow. And I suppose in this way it allows some new characters to come into the show with him in office.
Well, I just love how, I mean, and he literally says this on stage that, you know, he doesn't necessarily want to be there in that position, but it's just so funny as, you know, his staff is, you know, running different things by him. And he's like, what the heck is this? What the heck? You know what I mean? It's like, truly put someone who does not care to be in that position, in that position.
Who was the old timer behind John Dutton, kind of as he's making his march to the podium?
I was wondering that, because to be quite honest with you, that kind of looks like another person that is probably some famous person in general. Like, that doesn't, you know?
Right.
Like, I'm sure I don't know. I couldn't Reddit hole that one. So if you guys know, staff@tasteofcountry.com, please email us.
I think the character is the same character who tried to convince Casey to become governor back in season four. Remember, they sit Casey down, and there was that guy who's one of the ranchers. Casey takes care of that one problem by putting people in the cattle trap or the cattle. I forget what that's called, but he puts a guy in there. But the cattle guard, yeah. But then there's that old timer that kind of comes up to him on behalf of some of the other ranchers. So I think he has some pull, maybe within some sort of agricultural agency, but his name and position kind of escape me, but I certainly didn't think he was important enough to be like right on John Dutton's right shoulder as he's being inaugurated and speaking. That was confusing to me.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that was one, like I said, I feel like he's an important person outside of the show, but couldn't figure out who that was.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Well, we've kind of dodged around the big topic of this episode, two-part episode. I mean, the big tragedy that happened, it's tough to watch and maybe even difficult to talk about, but there certainly was one major death with this premiere.
I have many thoughts on this specific scene. If you want to kind of set up what we saw.
So Casey is at the Montana-Canada border taking care of some horse wranglers. And so he's miles and miles, hours from home. And Monica goes into labor. She's 3 weeks early, and she goes into labor. She's at home with Tate, and she thinks the baby's coming really fast, so she doesn't feel like she should wait. So she gets in the car and tries to drive herself to the hospital. Casey says he'll send an ambulance to kind of meet her halfway. Tate's in the passenger seat, And Monica's having contractions while she drives. So she's swerving and Tate's like, do you want me to drive? She's like, you can't drive. He's like, I can do better than you. And he's probably right.
Amen.
A buffalo steps onto the road. And it's unfortunate because there's a truck coming the other way with some goober eating snacks. And they kind of come up on the buffalo at the same exact time as Monica has a contraction. So there's this like trilogy of unfortunate events. Monica ends up hitting the buffalo or the other truck. Of course, she's not wearing a seatbelt because she's in labor. She goes through the windshield. The other guy presumably dies. Tate is wearing his seatbelt, so he ends up with just a broken arm, thankfully. And he gets out and is able to kind of call 911 and help his family out. But the devastating part about all that is that Monica loses the baby. And we learn that from Tate, who tells Governor John Dutton, this is the most heartbreaking line, I had a brother for an hour anyways. I mean, it was just a rip your heart out line from Tate. And the baby's name was, as we alluded to in the trivia question, John Dutton.
Which that already, you know, disproves my theory that I thought Monica was going to die in childbirth. I said that in a previous episode. But I think that that scene, the ending of that scene where you have Casey lying in the hospital bed with Monica, you have John in the room with them, and then you have Beth, you know, trying to hold Tate's hand and Jamie kind of, you know, in that, you know, in the shot, and they do kind of the slow pull out. I thought that was so well done.
That was the end of episode one. And I thought, okay, we've lived through that. We'll move on in episode two. But episode two, they rewind to show you how the crash happened. And then you really live through it. And that was that. Piggybacked with Jamie and Beth in the first 25 minutes of episode two was like, okay, now we're back. Welcome to Yellowstone. Here we are. This is what people pay to see.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I will say I do like in that scene, as heavy as it was and hard as it was to watch, I did like that we saw more of Tate. I don't know if becoming a man necessarily is the right word, but he's kind of always been the one that's, you know, we're always, where's Tate? Looking out for Tate. Kind of everyone needs to like coddle to Tate, where Tate now is kind of the provider in this scene. He's the one who has to go find the phone, call for help. I enjoyed seeing him kind of in a more, let's say, mature, you know, like you said, this now we're picking up several months down the road. He's does not look the same as he used to, like Carter doesn't. And so I really did like in this scene of like, okay, he's taking ownership of this situation. Monica physically cannot take ownership of this. And instead of just going, you know, don't know what to do, crouch, let's just wait for an ambulance to come, he took ownership, which I did really like seeing that.
100% agree. I think there's a lot of potential for that character. It would look now, I guess by my accounting, that maybe they're going to somehow move back to the ranch. That's kind of where I feel like we're headed. We know the funeral is going to be at the ranch, which I think is no small thing because she could have had it on her family's property on the Indian reservation. So I feel like we're going to incorporate them back into the Dutton family at some point. But I think that kind of also leads to what Casey saw on his vision quest.
Well, I will say I have some hot takes of this scene that I just wasn't too fond of. And also, this is where I went down the Reddit rabbit hole. Few things I just want to throw out here.
Hit me.
Number one, why? I understand that she's in labor, but number one, why didn't she wear a seatbelt? I don't think the fact that she's going in labor is an excuse for not wearing a seatbelt.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, number one, we didn't have to be thrown out of the car, okay? So seatbelt.
Okay,
fair great. Enough. She's in labor. Why didn't we let Tate drive? I understand that he's like 14 years old, but clearly, like, this was, I will say, I don't think this scene was needed. Like, we could have avoided all of this. Like, okay, have Tate drive.
Like, yeah.
It would have been fine. You're on country roads. Also, did she really not see... I mean, I'm not here to badger Monica right now, but I thought it was odd that at the very last second, I mean, they're on this dirt road in the middle of nowhere. I'm live in Texas and I've driven on a ton of random rural roads, you know when a car is coming because it is pitch black out there. So you're telling me she didn't see the headlights of the car until they were right up on the car? You know what I mean? There's some flaws here that as I was watching, I was like, this is, I would have seen, I mean, it was pitch black. I would have seen the car coming.
I'll think, now. So your first points are 100% valid. I think some poor decisions were made, probably, in the heat of having a baby. But I think she probably saw the other vehicle, but because the other vehicle was so close to her, it blinded her from seeing the buffalo.
Okay.
As well as the other driver. So that's kind of why there was that accident. Like, that accident, I don't think happens if there wasn't a buffalo right in the middle of the road.
Okay.
You're looking at me like, think this was... there's something wrong here, but I just don't know what it is.
I still think it was a little over dramatized. Do I still think it was like, it was a great, I hate saying like a great scene for the plot because it is a very heavy scene. Like there were so many like positive points to adding it in the episode. But the more I thought about it logistically, I was like, okay, we're really reaching here. But this is also not the only scene that I really felt like we were reaching here. I don't know if we want to dive into the wolves next
we can get into the wolves in a moment. But I want to kind of point out about the loss of the baby is I was actually a little bit surprised by how quickly Monica especially seemed to kind of come to terms to some extent. Like, because if you remember at the start of season 4, it was several episodes, I think, before we even saw Monica. And then she was just
true,
almost like unable to talk or communicate. There was so much anger and fear like living inside of her. But by the end of episode 2, her and Casey had kind of began a road to recovery of some sort. Like she had kind of, she wasn't going to beat up Casey for not being there. She wasn't going to beat up herself. They joked about how Tate wants a brother still, and maybe they'll try again. Like there was still kind of a glimmer of hope on that. And that was kind of surprising to me. And they also, in that scene, they talked about what Casey saw in the vision quest. And she asked if that was what he saw. And he said, I would never see that. But what surprised me there was that she still doesn't know what he saw. Like, does he have to keep that a secret? Is that part of the experience that he can't tell people what he saw? It must be. That's the only explanation why you wouldn't tell your wife.
I do think that's odd. Unless we're just like big question askers. I mean, yeah, I would have already been like, so what'd you see? You know, I saw the end of us. Okay, cool. Like, no. I'm asking like, what, like I need more.
No. My wife wouldn't go to bed that night. I'd just be in her ear. What'd you see? So what'd you see? Was it this? Was it this? Come on, you got to give me something. You know what I mean? Like, so it must be part of the whole experience where that she respects it and understands that he can't say more than he said. We still don't know though. 2 episodes in, we have no really clue what Casey saw.
Yeah, good on Monica. I for sure would not. Like you just said, I would have been like, so what'd you see? Please tell me, please. I won't tell anyone.
Yeah. Come on. And needling him. All right. So you didn't like the wolves. How come?
Okay. So here's the scene where Ryan and Colby, is it Colby? What's his other ranch hand's name? Is it Colby? I'm getting better with the bunkhouse's bros' names. Anyways, they go out in the middle of the night to shoot essentially wolves that are eating the cattle or attacking the cattle.
The calves. It's calving season on the ranch, which I did some research and learned is from January to March. So I actually think they're a little bit late because there's leaves on the trees. But yeah, it's cattle season. The cows are having their babies and they're trying to protect them.
So essentially in the middle of the night, go and shoot the wolves. Well, we have a slight issue. Once they come up on them, they realize that they are tagged. So Billy, I don't know if you want to kind of go into that a little bit of like the red flag with all that.
Well, the best I can understand is that they're preserved by the national park. These are wolves that are tagged as residents, so to speak, of Yellowstone National Park. I don't know a lot about that experience or how common that is or exactly what that means, but it almost felt like accidentally killing your neighbor's dog.
Right, Right. Well, and so the issue that they now have is Ryan panics going, if these are sedentary for 12 hours, we're going to have, you know, law enforcement essentially coming to take us out. And also the fact that we are on the governor's ranch is not going to look good. So they're trying to figure out what to do with these tags. Essentially, Rip comes and helps them. They tie these tags to logs. And so they get them off the ranch. They tie them to logs, throw them into the river, which will essentially, you know, drag them on. It'll keep them active. And then at some point, you know, they'll fall off, whatever. And they're saying that they won't be able to tie them to the Duttons. Here's where the flaw is. And I was like, what? All they have to do is with the GPS trackers, the collars, they're going to see that they were on the Dutton Ranch and then went straight from the Dutton Ranch to a river. Like, you're telling me that they're not going to be able to figure out who killed them? Like, I feel like that was a over-dramatized, like, okay, let's go throw them in the river, all the above, where I'm like, look, it is a GPS tracker. They're going to see that it was on the Dutton Ranch and went straight to the river, and they're going to know who killed them. Like, this is not rocket science.
Well, they will now that one got held up in the branches. Like, they're going to find it on the log, and that's going to be an issue. But I think the idea was that it would fall off the log and just sort of wash up ashore, and that the park would think that the wolf just died and it fell off and
all
somehow
four of them?
Got carried.
All five have up?
It didn't seem like the best of Rip's plans. Like, I feel like Rip has had better plans. Like, to me, the truth might have been like an option, I feel like.
The truth will set you free.
They wouldn't have got arrested. Like they said, they had the tags. It was just kind of an unfortunate thing. And would have bought some really, really bad publicity. But now they're going to have to explain or get their way out of an upcoming pickle with regards to all of this. Yeah, that's messy.
It's messy. And yet another branch on the tree of just like topics to touch on with this show.
There was a lot. We didn't talk about market equities a lot, and I only want to talk about market equities so that we can talk about Sarah Atwood, who seems to be
okay.
Market equities Beth. Like, we put everybody in like a little bit of a Beth box. Like, there's Native American Beth with Angela Blue Thunder, and now we have market equities Beth, and then we have the real Beth. But I'm a big fan of this Sarah Atwood character. She just seems like she's going to stir some stuff up and be a lot of fun to watch.
She's annoying to me, but that's okay.
You don't like, you're annoyed by her. How come?
I just think she's overdoing it. Like, when at the end she's like, I like when she gets mad. It means I'm going to make a lot of money. I'm like,
oh, I love that
who
line.
Who are you? She annoys the heck out of me. I'm like, who are you?
Is it possible that my attraction to this character and your sort of repulsion by this character are both for, they're both, yeah, your disdain are both for the same reason, that she's like this beautiful, powerful woman that I'm like, ah, and you're like, oh, I hate that girl. I don't even want to know her. I hate that girl.
No, it's not that. I'm here for that. It's just the like coming in acting like a big shot. Almost, I feel like she's overproving herself. I think that's what it comes down to, of like, instead of like just like the line I even said, I feel like she's overdoing it. Like, you can be powerful and in control and not have to, I don't know. So no, it's not for the same reason. It's just more so the reason that I'm like, all right, we get it. We get it. You're in like, I don't know.
Okay. All right. staff@tasteofcountry.com if you have a response or if you want to answer today's trivia question. We're going to do Monday recaps. Thursday, I think we can reveal this now. Thursday, we have an interview with Ryan Bingham coming. I chatted with Ryan Bingham for like 25 or 30 minutes. He plays Walker on Yellowstone, who we haven't seen too much from. But a really nice conversation with Ryan Bingham coming on Thursday, and then next Monday we'll recap episode 3 of the show.
Can we tease the first thing that you asked him, Billy, just because I love it?
What is Walker's last name?
That's how he entered the interview. And I love it. We do things different. We're very personable here at Days of Country. Hi, I'm Billy Gibson. Why doesn't he have a last name? Why don't you have a last name?
No, I'll share this. He shares an amazing story from the Lloyd Walker fight scene in the bunkhouse when Lloyd stabs or throws the knife at Walker. Mm-hmm. An amazing sort of behind the scenes story about how that all worked and how it went terribly wrong that is just truly hilarious. That was my favorite part of the interview when he kind of went backstage, so to speak. But a really nice conversation. Exactly. A good guy. It was everything I hoped it would be because I really wanted to talk with Ryan Bingham for a long time. And
yeah,
this ended up being a really fun conversation.
That's Billy Dukes, writer, podcast co-host, and Ryan Bingham stan. Who knew? I'm Addison Hager, and thank you so much for listening to Dutton Rules, a Yellowstone 1923 podcast. We'll return with episode breakdowns every Monday and have cast interviews midweek. Sterling Whitaker will also return soon to talk about conversations he's had with show stars like Cole Hauser and Luke Grimes, plus the latest conspiracy theories, so tap follow so those episodes download immediately to your podcast player. Dutton Rules is written by myself and Billy Dukes with the help from Sterling Whitaker. Each episode is produced by Billy Dukes, and you can find valuable recaps and explanations in the archives of Season 1 and email staff at tasteofcountry.com with your ideas, questions, and the answer to this week's trivia question. As always, Dutton Rules is another great Townsville Media podcast.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.